We come from the net.
Through podcasts.
Through headphones.
Through speakers.
To this place.
Your ears.
Our format? Podcasters.
To watch and review.
To watch the show reboot.
Its episodes, old and new.
To defend you from your boredom.
Some say the listeners live outside the net and listen to podcasts for fun.
No one knows for sure, but we're gonna podcast anyway. Welcome to Mainframe. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Welcome to Mainframe podcast, a podcast about Reboot, the animated series. I am one of your hosts, Evan David, and I'm here with my co-host,
Jahan Mitchell.
And we're here to talk about episode 4 of the reboot series, Medusa Bug. Okay, so John, I like this episode a lot.
Yeah, it is. Those apocalyptic episodes are always the best.
Yeah, I thought this was cool. And it's a neat premise, and I like the way they use the effect, but we'll get into that.
Right.
All right, so if you're brand new to the podcast, we're going to spoil everything. We're going through every episode of Reboot that there is, and you can follow along with us by either purchasing the series through iTunes, or you can watch, at least for now, you can watch it for free at ShoutFactoryTV.com. It's free and legal because they own the rights to the original shows. And so you can check it out there. But yes, we're going to get started talking about the Medusa Bug, which is the episode name. So we open up. Dot is a workaholic, which we know about a little bit from the previous episodes. She's got a very successful business with her diner, but apparently she has a lot of other side businesses and partnerships around there. And so we open up on that. And one thing I did notice in the opening sequence was we got some steady walk cycles from Dot and Enzo. And a walk cycle is something... in traditional animation, it's how your character walks, like their gait that they do. And with CGI, you can program in a repeating walk cycle. And so this, once again, this is historically the very first CGI animated television series. And I think for the most part, they're either using close-ups or they're using those... hoverboards or vehicles, so there's not a whole lot of walking that we see. And so here it's a good long lingering shot on the walking.
I was wondering what was going on with that. Like, it seemed pretty drawn out at multiple points in the episode.
But there's a reason why they're doing all this stuff with the hoverboards and the close-ups, because the walking looks horrible. So they're playing to their strengths, usually, you know, with what they're doing, because they know this does not look like realistic walking. We're not at this point yet where we can do that. But for this episode, we've seen it, and not great.
Nope.
Not great at all. Okay, so we cut from there, and we see Megabyte in his super awesome evil limo.
Yeah, definitely Mob Boss.
That is a limo. Cool car. Yeah.
And it just, the window rolls down, and it was a cool car.
And he is congratulating himself and Hack and Slash for pulling off an operation, which we don't get to see, but we hear about it. And the operation is that he has played out for a long time. He's lied, he's stolen, he's cheated, he's gone undercover, and it was to steal the Medusa weapon, which is Hexadecimal's ultimate weapon. And he doesn't even know what it does.
Right.
But she's been secretive. She's been ever so careful and private. And so he knew something was going on. And so he went and stole him. So these guys, they, like we've seen in previous episodes, they really are the warring mob bosses of Mainframe.
Right. And somehow they were having a joint venture or something. Like, she, like, trusted him, and she, like, bursts out of the...
Yes!
Out of the ground, and...
So here in this episode, we're seeing a lot of Hexadecimal's power.
And she...
That she has.
Is so powerful. Yeah. He's like Hela from Thor 3 to Ragnarok.
Yeah, so I'm wondering how, like, because everything we've seen from Megabyte so far, it's been, he's either has lots of resources, like armies and stuff, and when he wants to get his own hands dirty, he can do his feral Wolverine saber-tooth run thing, but Hexadecimal is exploding out of the ground like Superman or Goku.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's flying and just super powerful. She sicks an army of Nulls on mm-hmm. Megabyte, and Nulls are the what happens to you if you lose in a game cube that drops and you lose, you are nullified and turned into these things. So she's got an army of them just like a river.
Right.
Just coming at Megabyte. Hack and Slash show off a bit of their power because he's like, take care of this. And they're on a bridge. And all the Nulls are coming across the bridge. And Hack and Slash just destroy the bridge, the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
So all the Nulls go pouring like a waterfall into the ocean below. And we don't really know what the ocean is or what it's made of.
Right.
It looks like energy, just waves of energy. Yeah. And
it doesn't look like they survive, though.
No, I don't think you can swim in it. Yeah, I think if you go in it, you die.
Then the tanks show up.
Yeah.
And the missiles and lasers are flying. And do they hit the target? It's like she's Mewtwo or something. She's like...
They hit her.
They hit her. Yeah. Hit the force field that she generates. Up. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so like Megabyte, he drives away, he's hit all these tanks. And it's like a good 30 seconds of just the tanks popping out more and more missiles and laser cannons. They're not even shooting them.
Right.
It's just... You know, it's like Transformers. And yeah, like you said, like everything they've got, they just unload on Hexadecimal and she's fine.
And I'm like, oh, that's overkill. And then she just like blocks it all.
Yeah.
Just like, whoa.
And then she drops her force field and like there's smoke and she's like, hello. And then we just see Megabyte driving away and in the background is just horrible explosions of Hexadecimal just killing everybody, apparently. So yeah. So then we go back to Megabyte's place, and he's looking at a vid window of one of his generals, apparently the only one who survived.
Right. Upturned tanks in the background. Yeah,
craters. All this stuff. And he's like, she said something about being aboard, and now she left, and so I'm just here.
He's like, perimeter secure. Like, whatever. With what? It's just gone.
It's you. You're the only thing there.
Oh.
So Megabyte, then he's like musing about how, oh, I have the Medusa weapon. Yeah. And it's just this little, like, it looks kind of like a fancy perfume bottle thing.
Yeah, it looks like something on Indiana Jones. It's like a jewel or like...
Yeah, the jewels are better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he like presses the middle of it and they kind of like starts spreading all over his arm. And
yeah.
And he's just like... What is
it? Yeah, he quickly realizes this is not a weapon, it's a virus itself. And it is slowly going up his arm and turning him into granite or stone.
Yeah.
And he's like asking his computer, find out what this is and how to stop it. And unknown file type, unknown solution. And then Hexadecimal pops up on his video screen
mm-hmm.
and says, oh... This was all a trap. You know, it was all my secrecy, everything about it. I knew you couldn't resist, and you fell right into it.
Yep.
And so Megabyte turns to stone, and then his entire fortress turns to stone, and then it continues to spread
mm-hmm.
to cover all of Mainframe, or it's starting to cover all of Mainframe. So then we go back to...
The picnic
with the
roadside assistants.
Because Bob and Enzo are trying to get Dot to take a day off because
mm-hmm.
she's a workaholic. At one point, they physically carry her out of the diner. They throw her in the backseat of the car and drive off. And Dot is very surprised because Bob's car is actually working.
Right.
So apparently that doesn't happen very often.
No. And then they break down.
Yeah. So they break down. They don't even get out of town to a picnic spot. So they're in like a median. Dot has the picnic blanket spread out and all the dishes on the grassy medium in the road. And Bob is fixing the car. But then Enzo sees that Frisket, his dog, is running away from the Medusa bug.
Have we seen this dog before?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, like, it just kind of randomly appeared in this episode. I was just like...
He's in the first episode.
Is he?
Yeah. Okay. Remember he tries to bite Bob's leg when he's trying to go into the diner.
It's been a while and I'm jet lagged.
That's all right. So, yes, we have seen Frisket before. So he's running away. And Frisket, you know, I don't know.
The dog running scene. If the walking scene was bad enough with the people, it was even worse with the dog trying to run.
Oh, I thought the dog was... I mean, obviously, it's still not great. But yeah. I thought it was better than the people walking.
I don't know. It just kind of looked like the dog was, like, floating in air, just kind of like...
Moving his legs.
Moving its legs.
Kind of. So the Medusa virus is spreading, and what it is just the effect of, like, a wave of stone, or it's turning everything, spreading all over everything it touches, and turning it into stone. And eventually, Frisket is surrounded by the stuff, and he turns into stone.
Yeah.
And Enzo's like, no! But it keeps coming, so they've got to get in the car and go to survive, or else they're going to get turned into stone.
At the last second.
Yeah, but the car won't start.
Right. A classic car won't start. Come on.
They finally get to start. Bob just barely...
jumps in.
Yeah, jumps in right as the thing's going where his feet was. And they get in the car and they drive away and they say, oh, I don't know what this is. We need to go to see Fong.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to the middle of the city. They go see Fong. They don't have to play Pong against him this time. I think it's because of the last time where Bob just hit him in the head with the...
Yeah, and maybe he clearly sensed that the apocalypse was coming. So it's like, well, I forget the Pong. We'll just go.
This isn't an ironclad policy.
Right.
During apocalyptic events, we can forego the Pong. Okay. So they're talking with Fong, and they're saying, who could have done this? Who's behind this? Could it be Megabyte? No, it's too chaotic for Megabyte. And plus, Megabyte's tower is Turnstone.
Right.
So it's obviously hexadecimal. She's the only one who could be behind it. And then we learn that the stakes are higher than we thought, because not only does it turn to stone, but it's showing us now that after a period of time that you've been stone, you just disintegrate into nothing.
Yep.
And it's lower energy things disintegrate first. It takes longer for higher energy things. So if you are just a sign, you're going to go. But if you're a sprite, you know, fully functioning higher energy being, then it's going to take the longest to disintegrate you. So this is for real. People are going to be dying here, and potentially the entire city and the entire system could be destroyed as well.
And Fong pulls Bob aside and he's like, well, like, you might be able to survive it because you're a guardian.
Yeah.
But we don't know. Yeah. So
you could be immune to its effects.
Right.
Yeah. So he's like, I don't really want to find out if I am immune or not. So Fong opens up a secret chamber in the wall and goes through. And apparently this is where Mainframe keeps its arsenal. And so Bob is listing everything that he needs. Like, I need this. And it's all these complicated tools and such, and Fong's like, this is not the supercomputer, Bob, this is Windows 95, and the only thing we have is this, which is a virus erase command, which just looks like an eraser.
Yeah, literally eraser, pink too.
Yeah. And he's like, well, I guess if we augment it, we put some add-ons on it, it may be able to do the job. So he's getting equipped. Meanwhile, we take a look outside. So Mainframe, right, the city layout, it's got this big central ball in the middle of it, and around it is the four districts of Mainframe. And so the ball is kind of like City Hall, the main command center. Everyone is fleeing, all the citizens of Mainframe, all the binomes, all the sprites, all the numbers, they're all fleeing to this thing because the virus is spreading on the outskirts first and heading toward the center. So they're getting in there and, you know, airships and buses are dropping people off and they're ushering them inside and they're setting up refugee camps in the hallways of the Grand Central Chamber. And so it's like, it's that kind of stuff that really makes you feel like, wow, this is serious stuff. And these are real people fleeing for their lives. I mean, they make a point to show families and there's babies.
A pooping baby.
Yeah, there's a pooping baby. Yes. Because the dad puts on a hexadecimal mask and scares the kids. So he poops his pants. I would too. So then Bob flies out of there on his hoverboard with the virus erase command, goes to an area that's been heavily turned to stone, And now we see that he has augmented the erase command, and it's got lots of little nodes and things sticking out of it. And he just throws it down at the ground that's been infected.
Right.
And flies away. And it lets off a huge explosion, like a massive bubble of energy.
Right. It looked like flames, too.
It's yeah.
Like,
and the flame engulfs the camera, and we get to go inside the flame bubble. And mm-hmm. we see that inside the flame bubble, it is eradicating the virus. But then it shrinks back. The bubble shrinks back
right.
and doesn't work, and everything is still stone.
Yeah. Not powerful enough.
No, not powerful enough. It did not work. I forgot to mention, in the refugee camps, we see the guy from Al's Diner. And he's making stuff.
Oh, yeah. What? Yeah. And there's a huge line, and he's giving like a tiny little portion.
Yeah, he's giving him a pea, like one pea per person.
Yeah.
okay. Another thing about this virus infecting stuff is we get the people making the show really know how to use their strengths, because we get more perspective shots.
Right.
We're seeing the virus spread from the perspective of the virus.
Right.
So it's like the camera's going up a wall and then, you know, turning a sharp right angle, going around things, and you can't do that sort of stuff without lots of expensive animation
right.
in 2D. But since it's 3D, they're really utilizing that. It's pretty cool.
Hmm.
So everybody's inside the dome thing, which is a hovering.
Right. It looked like it was hovering, but it didn't.
Oh, I guess it's not, because it's got a central pillar that's holding it up.
Yeah, I was confused. It looked like it was going to hover, and then there was a central pillar, and it had like a shield and outer layer and everything.
They pull in the bridges.
Right.
And they have physical shields they put over the doors.
Right.
And then an energy force field.
Right.
But the virus is able to climb that central pillar holding it up.
Yep.
It infects the force field, which disintegrates immediately.
Right.
And then gets into.
Just kind of goes in layer by layer.
Yeah.
Like an onions. And then everybody
turns to stone. And it's. There's a really kind of powerful scene where it's the baby is crying because the virus is inside.
Right.
And the mom picks it up, and they don't show us the mom and the baby getting frozen, but the baby's got a doll, and it drops the doll, and it lands on the floor, and the virus overtakes the doll. So it's like, I guess that was too graphic to show the mom and baby getting.
But it was implied.
Yeah, exactly. Just like in Mulan.
Oh.
Where they find the doll. But we know that the little girl who owned the doll is gone as well.
Yep.
It's very sad.
You're right.
So, you're right. Everyone is frozen. Fong, Dot, Enzo, Bob. But then Bob
pulls a Neo Matrix.
Yes, exactly.
Breaks out and he's free.
Because he is immune, apparently, to the virus. And so he has no choice but to just go fight Hexadecimal directly. And good luck, because we've seen how powerful she is now. Hexadecimal's in her fortress, or whatever, her lair, and she's surrounded herself with frozen people.
Yeah, stone statues, just talking to them.
And one of them disintegrates in front of her. She's like, oh, this garden would be so much more nice. At least for now. And her little pet, Scuzzy, the little dog floaty thing, is he's frozen and he's not responding, and she's talking to him
she's
too.
Still talking. Mm-hmm.
But Bob makes it inside, and Hexadecimal's sitting on her chair. This was my favorite part.
Yes.
This was great. She's sitting in her chair. He sneaks up behind her and like swings it on a rope and
boom!
Yeah, kicks her. She goes flying through the air, but then she stops midair and she's like, I sense a presence.
It's like, wow, no, really.
So funny.
Yeah.
And so Bob is trying to fight her. But this is like, okay, it's like from The Last Jedi, where Rey is trying to fight Snoke. And
it's not happening.
No. Like, Hex has him in a forced chokehold. She's doing like aerial acrobatics around him. He can do nothing.
Right.
He's just like frozen there in midair.
Yep.
She has telekinetic powers or whatever. She's just, he is no match for her on any level.
She is so overpowered.
Yeah.
But then.
Yes, then he decides the only way I can do this is to use my wits.
Yeah, psychology.
Yes. So he tells her, like, I love what you've done with Mainframe. And she's like, what are you talking about?
I'm like,
what?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, why is that?
Because now it is so peaceful and predictable. Everything is at rest. Everyone's going to be in the same spot. Nothing's going to change, ever. And, of course, Hexadecimal, she's all about chaos. So she's like, no, what have I done? This is horrible. And so she decides, I'm going to turn off the virus. And how does she do that? She snaps her fingers.
And the whole thing comes back to life. Just like
that. 1 second.
And it's like,
it's all sucked back in.
No dramatics, no nothing. Yep. It's just like, gone.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, wow, that was easier than expected.
Another thing she does in this encounter is she calls Bob my love.
Does she? Yes. Okay, I didn't catch that.
So I wonder if they've got like a Batman Catwoman thing going on.
Right.
Except Batman Catwoman thing I think is more mutual.
I don't know. In the beginning when we first saw Hexadecimal, Bob was kind of like, no, but I'm not like opposed to this either. I don't know. That's just the vibe I got from him.
I don't think he's into it at all. I think he's like, he's playing off of it, you know, to try to get on her good side.
Fair enough.
And I don't think she's looking for a romantic relationship with Bob.
No.
But I think she likes him for his body. And and because right before she calls him my love, she's like, well, now I'm going to have to destroy you and eradicate you from existence the old-fashioned way with my horrible Lady Deathstrike nails that I have.
Oh, that reminds me. That wasn't at this scene, but it was a little bit before. She's like, and now for my happy face.
happy.
It literally goes from, like, she's a green mouth and, like, I don't know what color eyes, but then all of a sudden everything turns red and, like, I don't know, like, either scratches or claw marks.
No, like vampire teeth.
Okay, yeah, like, just like, pop out. It's like, horrible, holy cow. Like,
terrifying.
What is about to happen?
Yeah.
Was that when she was destroying all the tanks?
I think so. Yeah, she did it a couple times. She did it with the tanks, and I think she did it with Bob, too.
That must have been the first time, because, like, it was like, holy cow, like, stuff is about to go down.
Well, I like the part where she's very worried when Bob throws the erase command down.
Right.
And then it doesn't work. She's like, happy, 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 happy. Like, she keeps waving her arms in front of her face, and her face just gets happier and happier and evil. So she's an interesting villain. Like I think we said before.
Right.
Megabyte is very much Lex Luthor. She's very much the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
With superpowers.
Yeah. That's the understatement.
Yeah.
She definitely has an Infinity Gauntlet or something because she is very overpowered.
She did snap.
Yeah. Everything was back to normal. Yeah.
All right. So then at the very closing of the episode, Bob and friends finally get their picnic.
Right.
They're like, I can finally relax after saving the day. And then right as he's about to relax, warning. Incoming game. Yeah. And we don't get to see the game.
No.
It's just
first time.
Played for comedy because, I was going to relax. And nope. Gotta go do some other stuff.
And this is the first episode that he didn't get tackled by
Enzo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Enzo got tackled by his dog.
Not a lot of comedy in this episode.
No.
Just a lot of serious stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doomsday.
This is definitely the darkest episode so far.
Right. So far.
Yeah. And very serious.
Okay.
Oh, this is nothing.
This is really?
Yeah, this is nothing. Just wait.
Oh, boy. Yeah. This is interesting.
Mm-hmm. So buckle up.
Yeah.
But yeah, good episode. I like this one. I feel like all the episodes in the first season they're classics. And I think that's because they replayed them a lot and, yeah, this is the foundation of the series that will just get better and better as we go. So,
wow. This is only episode 4?
Only episode 4.
Wow.
There's only like 13 episodes per season, I think. So
still, though. Yeah. This felt like a mid-season finale, not a like fourth episode.
Yeah. But,
all right. We'll see what happens.
Just gets
next.
Better, man.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Cool. All right. So if you'd like to join us in the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Please send us some feedback. We will read it on the air, respond to it, and we will have a good time doing that. So until next time, I'm Evan David.
And I'm John Mitchell.
We shall see you later. Thanks for listening to the Welcome to Mainframe podcast, hosted by Evan David and John Mitchell. You've heard from us, now we'd love to hear from you. Drop us an email or voice message at welcometomainframe@gmail.com. Dare to venture out onto the web and visit our site at welcometomainframe.com. Welcome to Mainframe is a proud member of the Relevant to Your Interests podcast network.